Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and spaceships. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow travelers through time and space. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I want to make it clear before we get any further that dying is not my superpower, before anybody gets any ideas.
Let me just put down this shotgun axe I've been carrying.
Thank you.
Okay. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Dying in terms of making jokes is my superpower. I don't kill it when I make
dying
a joke. I'm just dying on stage. That's my whole
dying up
my
here
whole shtick. Yeah.
Well, that is good. We can all stick together in our various death-related capacities. I don't know. Anyway, we're here.
You know what? These days are too dark to be making.
That's probably true. Let's brighten it up a little bit, shall we? We are. Yeah, you do it. You're gonna do it else. We're here to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 6, entitled "Adapt or Die." And Mr. John Moltz, the non-superpowered, is going to do this week's recap.
I just said dying wasn't my superpower. I didn't say
he has another superpower.
I don't know, whatever. You didn't give me a replacement, so I assume you have no superpowers.
His superpower is that he actually turns into Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Is that a power?
My tail is removable.
I'm sorry, John. That's not true at all. You're a pretty happy guy. Anyway.
All right. So Sybil and the hunter, whose name, by the way, is Luke. I didn't really realize that until this episode.
Who's his father, you think?
Oh, my God. Are we going to find that out? I suppose we might find that out. Anyway, they decide that they're going to wake up the rest of the hunters. They're getting serious now. 1976 S.H.I.E.L.D. has May and Coulson and is tracking the Zephyr. Yo-Yo and Deke are back on the ship, and Mac wants to get into the lighthouse to save his parents. The lighthouse suddenly attacks the Zephyr before General Stoner ordered it. Daisy and Sousa wake up in a barn, drugged by Nathaniel, and she can't quake, but he comes in and tells them his evil plan. Stoner questions Coulson and May and Agent King.
Can I just take a moment to say General Stoner is the best name for Patrick Warburton? It's so perfect.
And they make a joke about it too.
They make a joke about it. Yeah. It's great.
So Agent King makes this mistake of touching. There's a lot of mistake touching in this season. Touching May, who figures out that she's a Chronicom. The Zephyr shielding gets damaged by the attack, which means that the ship will rip apart if it suddenly tries to jump, so they have to start fixing it. But Gemma is having memory lapses again. Enoch tells her it'll be okay. Yo-Yo and Mac free his parents, who are confused about the whole situation. Agent King takes Stoner to the basement to remove his face, as Coulson and May realize that the Chronicoms are evolving and learning how to steal personalities as well as just faces. They get to the basement and rescue Stoner, who now believes them. Nathaniel takes a bunch of blood and stuff from Daisy, and less said about that the better, and they dump her back in the stable with Sousa, who tells her his story from when he got wounded to try and keep her spirits up, I guess. She manages to hide a piece of glass in her skin, which is awfully painful. Deke catches Enoch fixing the thing in Gemma's head and freaks out. He zaps him with a defibrillator. Coulson finds the nest... Coulson finds the nest of hunters and taps into the chat room where Sybil and he play 20 questions. While trying to get through a door in the lighthouse because of the lockdown, all the doors are locked. Mac's group hear hunters coming. His father hurts his arm on the mechanism, and Mac goes to fight them. And he does pretty well, considering he's fighting a bunch of Chronicoms. Jenna and Deke... Jenna tells Deke that she and Fitz found a place where all the Chronicoms' moves could be exposed, and that Fitz is hiding there. She knows where it is, but she has this thing in her head, which she calls Diana, to suppress the memories so that it would keep Fitz safe. But Diana is malfunctioning, and she's forgetting what she's supposed to remember and remembering what she's supposed to forget.
So wait, we understand that Diana is repressing more than expected, right?
It seems to be malfunctioning.
Malfunctioning, right.
So because it seems like it's failing in both ways. Some days she's remembering what she can't. Well, not days, but...
Yeah.
We'll talk about this after. Let's just... It's just a confusing point for me. That's all.
Right. Sousa uses the piece of glass on one of the guards, and as he goes to take Daisy out, Nathaniel comes in quaking, but his whittle bones are cracking. Sucks to be you, buddy. And he manages to knock himself out with his new powers, and Sousa escapes with Daisy. Gemma and Deke get to the Zephyr, get the Zephyr up and running again. Coulson informs Sybil that dying is his superpower before he uses the bombs to blow up the hunters and himself in the process. The lockdown ends, and just as Mac is losing to Luke, Stoner shoots Luke. May, Mac, Yo-Yo, and Mac's parents get on the Quinjet and escape. Enoch fixes Diana, and Gemma swears Deke to secrecy about Diana's existence. Mac's dad makes the mistake of touching May, who realizes he's a Chronicom. So is his mom, apparently. Fight, fight, fight. And they end up getting pushed out of the plane. When they hook up with the Zephyr, finally, Daisy and Sousa are there, and Sousa decides that he's going to stay with the group. They jump, and then Mac immediately decides to take a minute to ride off on his motorcycle. Deke goes to check on him, and whoops, the Zephyr jumps again, and they're stranded.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
In fairness to Mac, he didn't go far. He really did. Just needs
I thought that was weird because he like drives up. He's like, I gotta clear my head, and then it's right, like the next shot like is him like, yards. It's just right there. It's just the ship.
Yeah. Right. He could have just walked
exactly.
I don't know.
Like he rode his motorcycle really fast for about 30 seconds.
It's way more dramatic. Yeah, I did not peg him for a drama queen, but he definitely drama queened that. He was like a 6-year-old who ran away from home and he just
didn't get far.
You know, and he hid behind the garbage cans.
He was also really like unreceptive when Deke is like, "Hey, Mac, we gotta go." He just sat there. He didn't do anything. He was just like, wasn't even looking up at that. Like, you know, yeah, he's a little.
Yeah,
he's having a moment.
I get it. Yeah, I think he drove out and then just shut down. He was like, "Look, I just want to sit here and contemplate." I mean, he just killed his parents.
Or not his real parents.
Yeah, no.
I mean, yeah, yeah, well,
right, right. I mean, it's still gotta be tough. Who hasn't killed their robo parents?
Yeah, I mean, he threw what looked like his mom out of a
yeah,
plane.
Yeah, that's kind
of
rough.
That's going to mess with you, right? Yeah. Yeah. And after learning that, like, you know, he was so happy when he saw them. Right. I love that scene where he just tries to give her a hug and they're like, yeah, what the hell is going on?
I'm sure these two strangers don't care about this, Director Mac Gilmore.
This is my girlfriend.
This is my girlfriend is the funniest line. And she's like, they don't care. They don't need to know.
I really enjoyed her calling him Director Macklemore. I also thought that was very funny. That scene is probably among the best in this episode, I will say.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the Chromacons also did a great job of acting. Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
We'll they act like they don't. They act appropriately for people that don't expect or know who Mac is. Although they must, right? Like I know they take on the personalities, but I'm curious about what layering they have, right? Like,
they are really got to get into their APIs there. Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, are they aware that they're Chronicons, and they're using?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, because they came out. Yeah, you know, they came out of it at the end, and they. Yeah, I mean, I think they're aware. It's not. It's not like. What was it?
It's like an LMD that doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I guess, yeah, right. May didn't know at first, right? And then, you know, the Cylons.
Mm-hmm.
The final five Cylons there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We mentioned in our chat, we were talking about the guy who plays Nathaniel. And I think we all kind of enjoyed his over the top performance. In my note, actually, I thought he kind of channeled Anthony Perkins, who played Norman Bates in Psycho. Maybe. He's got kind of that air to him, to his like pronunciation and everything. It's a little stylized. Yeah. I thought he was really good for like, I mean, you know, it's not a complex character, but it was, you know, I thought he did a good job of the slightly, you know, over the top villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. He reminded me of Michael Shannon in Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like a similarly sort of evil guy. In Boardwalk Empire, he's a basically a religious zealot. He's like...
Okay, I haven't seen it.
It's good. It's very HBO.
Mm-hmm.
It's got... oh my God, Dan, help me out here.
It's Steve Buscemi.
Thank you. Man, having you guys as friends is the best because I just get to forget everything and I just...
You're the Gemma here. We've implanted a chip in your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like it some days. It's great. I liked his delivery. It was intense. What is that accent? It's not quite a stubborn drawl, but it's...
Yeah, it's something weird and affected, but it is...
Right.
It's unique, and I thought it was not... I thought it was cool. I don't know. I thought it worked.
It is super intense, though.
Yeah.
like,
I just enjoyed his delivery on the, when he's talking about transferring the powers over, and he says, it's risky, but I want to try new things.
I know. I love it. It's like, I know you're worried about me. And but you,
yeah.
You know, the character doesn't believe that you are worried about him, but he's
right.
He's just
right.
being such a dick about it. Yeah. Ugh,
and telling Daisy, Daisy loves her whole vibe.
Yeah. Anyway, great. Love that guy.
Yeah, that was good.
In fact, I liked him. I liked the previous guy, his brother, Malik.
Yeah,
big boy Malik. This guy was a. I didn't think he would be interesting, but I was wrong.
He's
intense and he's scarier in a way.
Right. And he's kind of set up to be, I think we'll see him again. Now that Wilfred is out of the picture. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that affects, because he was supposed to die. Right. And he talks about how he wasn't really into Hydra. Like he learned stuff, but he's not into worshiping the hive and
alien squid guy.
And, I think he's going to, he's our sort of our villain probably for the next few episodes, at least, I imagine.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like
we've had the other Malak before, so I think they're focusing on this guy as a chance sort of change.
Yeah,
this guy seems to be doing more of a personal power grab than a
for
the greater organization.
He just wants he wants powers, right? He just wants his inhuman powers.
Yeah.
And he's scarier in a way. Wilfred's felt like a very serious mob boss
kind of
guy.
This guy's just a wild card.
He's totally wild card. Yeah. And he's like batty. He's just kind of nuts. So like, who takes glands out of people and sticks them in their body? Like, that is a weird, I mean, not that calling Cthulhu from like another planet or another realm is normal, but it's a little bit more normal than like doing whatever the hell he's doing to Daisy. So
I enjoyed the Coulson and Sybil conversation, mainly because it just has like, it's your very untraditional hero meets villain scenario where it's like, let me just answer all of your questions. Like, she specifically says at some point, like, I don't see any reason not to tell you any of these things.
Yeah,
because she can't do much.
She doesn't volunteer things though, either.
Right?
Because he talks about, you know, what's the deal with Max's parents, and she does not reveal that they're Chronicoms.
Right. Right. But I liked that, and I liked her giving the percentages of like Nathaniel's success and Daisy escaping, and Coulson has that very, you know, fatherly moment where he hears she's like 86% chance she gets out, and he says, that's my girl. Like, I enjoy that. I continue to enjoy their relationship. I was a little shy. I'm kind of interested to see what they do with Coulson having blown himself up. Like, I don't have any doubt we'll see him again, obviously. But
they're just going to make another LMD.
Right.
I would imagine.
But it was shocking. I didn't expect him to do it.
Here's the thing, though. This is the last season, as we all know, and I really enjoyed the revelation, or the realization, I suppose, that dying is his superpower.
Mm-hmm.
Dying is the superpower that enabled the Avengers in the first movie, right?
Right, yeah.
He's died a lot. He keeps, and every time it's an effective move for him. And that realization of that, like, you know what, whatever happens, somehow I keep managing to come back.
Yeah.
And at this point, he's like, look, I'm not even the same physical entity I was previously. So why not? Like, why not just go for it?
I got conspiracy theory, but go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, May's frustration with that is so great. I mean, it's perfect because, you know, if you had somebody around you who you loved and they kept dying and coming back, it would be super frustrating.
Yeah. No, I think it's a nice scene with the two of them locked up. And again, we talked about this a little bit in previous weeks, where it's like, neither of them is the person that they were, you know, 2 years ago.
Right.
And so seeing them both sort of come to terms with that is interesting. My my conspiracy theory bit about that is that, I mean, obviously we're in the midst of a season that's all about time travel, right? So time travel shenanigans at some point. We don't know what's happening to the time. Like, they have made substantial changes to the timeline at this point. I imagine we'll get at least a glimpse of how that might impact their future, like the future they came from and how different it will be. But I'm also not convinced that at some point they won't be able to sort of go back and change something more fundamental, and perhaps Coulson will be alive again and different, you know, everybody will have different outcomes, right? Because like the end result of this episode is a lot of the team is sort of, I mean, there's Deke and there's Mac who are physically separated. Daisy's been, you know, knocked out. Gemma's has memory problems. You know, everybody, it's like the splintering, right? This is the low point where everybody is getting everything sort of stripped away, And, you know, we again still haven't seen Fitz, and we're about halfway through the season.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that ends up. Where are they going? Where is it? Like, because this episode was a little bit connective tissue-y.
Yes, I think so. I enjoyed enough of the performances and like enough of the character moments that I was fine with it being. It didn't feel like a filler episode of Arrow. You know,
right?
not that. Here's the thing: Arrow was a fun show that we covered a lot, and we tend to, or at least I tend to, use it as a baseline to compare stuff about. Like, so I'm not knocking Arrow. I'm just saying that, like, look, they had 23 episodes, and some of them had to just take some time. This one did take a little bit of time, but there were enough character moments. Certainly the stuff with Mac, Sousa's backstory, all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I dug. I thought it was worth taking time to do that without necessarily moving the plot on that much. Also, Grand Commander Putty is awesome. It's just great. Grand Admiral Putty. But in terms of the timeline stuff, Mac has a brother, and there's two of them at home, but his parents have now been killed, and yet that didn't happen previously.
Right, right.
And yet we still have a character who had two parents growing up. So we're doing this timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff, right? Like
they're outside of the timeline.
It's not the Back to the Future. Yeah. Exactly. It's not the Back to the Future timeline where you start getting erased if...
Yeah.
But that seems to be what, what's his name? Future Boy keeps, Deke keeps worrying about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But
like, it's weird. Like, they're not clear on the rules.
He doesn't need to.
Yeah. But I like that none of them are really clear on the rules. Like, like, we're a lot more privy to the intricacies of this time travel stuff than they are. They're just experiencing it, and they don't necessarily have,
sure,
all of the information collated in one place in a good 42
It's easier. Episode. It's easier for me to be, you know, flip about it.
Right.
Yeah. How would you like it if you were traveling through time, John?
I know only you are, Dan.
Yeah.
Of only, the people on this podcast.
Only in one direction, pal.
Yeah. I was going to say slowly, but I'll do it quickly. Yeah, to be honest. Right.
Slowly at first and then suddenly.
I liked May's and Stoner's bit at the end where May tells him that he needs a cover story for the lighthouse, which I think is harkens back to his hologram appearance in several seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And he very genteelly like asks her out and, you know, points out that she's not doesn't report to him, and then May responds with, "Technically, you report to me."
Yeah,
yeah, I love it. Also, level 7 Trump's a general. That's impressive.
And the guy who cares, arguably, well, is he the director? It's unclear. Yeah,
I don't think
power structure is always a little weird.
Yeah, I don't think he is the director, but
yeah,
because technically, Malik was Freddie was his boss.
Yeah. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but who cares? Yeah, whatever. Right. Like, whatever. Like, general's a pretty high rank. You've got, what, 4-star general, that's when it tops out. Well, except for the Joint Chiefs, right? So,
yeah.
Being a level 7, seems like there's a few of those guys. Like, whatever. Let's just go with Shield.
No,
let's really
break I don't need the org chart.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to break down the org chart, guys. I need to know about the hierarchy and who reports to who, because this is the kind of stuff that I live for.
Well, what our readers don't know, but we are intimately familiar with, is that the episode of the Speedy Arrowcast where we tried to break down the corporate structure of Queen Consolidated is our most downloaded episode by a wide margin.
I mean,
people love that stuff.
No
they
joke, though.
It.
I remember when I was, you know, coming up, like writing stories, you know, 20 years ago, I remember poring over the World Book Encyclopedia that we had at home to figure out various organizational structures. Like, I was building this universe that was very Star Trek like because I loved Star Trek.
There we go.
And ding. And but I was like looking up like what I didn't know how like military you couldn't Google stuff in those days, right? Like as easily.
Right.
So, you know, you would I had the book, like the different volumes out, and I would look up like what are the rank structures for different militaries? How are they organized? What is the like what's the political organization of the United Nations structured like? I really, for whatever reason, that stuff is my like my jam. I'm just super into like weird esoteric structural organizations.
What's weird, like in Star Trek, they used to have Commodore.
That's right.
In the original series, and then they got rid of it. And I think they got rid of it because they needed to promote Kirk out of the captaincy, and they didn't want him to be a Commodore, because the Commodore Kirk, I mean, that probably sounded too alliterative. And Admiral just sounds cooler, I guess. And so they got rid of it for a number of years, and then I guess it's back now, because in Picard, there's a Commodore O.
Yeah.
I thought she was a commander.
I mean, it could be an adjacent rank, too. And just as a total aside, one of our readers, Dan Decker, he used to go by Commodore Decker on Twitter all the time. I recorded a podcast with him 2 days ago, just about, guess what? We end up talking about Star Trek. But anyway, that'll be out. I just wanted to shout out to Commodore Decker while we're talking about Commodores.
FYI, it's not currently a rank in the U.S. Navy, although it is a honorary title for a senior captain.
That's that's about where I was going to go, because I think it's originally a British rank, but
I think so.
That's why Commodore Decker would outrank Kirk in it.
Right.
You know, he's a more senior captain. He's like a 2-star captain, or whatever it is. Like, he's got 6 pips rather than 5 pips, or I guess it's 5 rather than 4. Who cares? And then Admiral is a whole different thing. Admiral is actually like logistics, getting stuff done, running the training school, I guess, in Kirk's case, rather than being out on a ship. And Commodore Decker is clearly still a captain of a ship, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea of Commodore being like, okay, when a fleet assembles, it's the Commodore that gets to be in charge.
Yeah, he's like the fleet captain.
Like, they would have made Commodore Picard, like, you know when, oh God, we're going way off track. But in First Contact, when Picard shows up and he takes command of the fleet, that's a Commodore move, right? Like, he shows up and like, everybody just does what he says.
Because otherwise, he's just a captain like everybody else. They're all
it's
captains.
Like nobody bickers. People, he shows up and it's like, okay, Picard's on the scene. We're just going to do what he says. And
there's nobody else that's, you know, that should be.
No,
he's the best. I mean, you know,
so except maybe just get out of the way. Hood. Yeah.
Anyway, now that we've broken down the org chart, which was the important part of this,
right?
I thought, let's see, do we have anything else to talk about?
I got a couple of small notes. Yeah. First of all, I think it's hilarious that Chronicoms take your face, they take your memories, and they take your clothes, but they don't take your underwear.
I don't need underwear.
I took a note of that shot in that, it's weird that they just take your face, although that is a horror, like a body horror kind of thing. So I get it. It doesn't make sense that they have to erase it rather than just copy it. Fine.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's creepy.
But I kind of like that shot in that it was, two dudes and a woman lying on the ground?
Right.
But it wasn't salacious. Like, she wasn't wearing, she was just wearing.
Yeah, more like exercise underwear than like,
Yeah, you'd see somebody at the gym like that. It was just underwear that was like, well, I'm at work doing like top level spy stuff. I'm not gonna be wearing like a fancy lace brassiere or panties or anything. It was just, you know what, this is just I appreciated that because it made me think that, like, you know what, this show is, I can't remember a time that they were salacious at any point. Maybe in the first season, but I can't
they were
think of it.
There were some times in the first season when they were a little.
Yeah, they were like a little bit trying to be.
I mean, they've done it here and there, mostly with Daisy, but.
Yeah, I think they also, what was also interesting about that shot was, like, you know, all the bodies just thrown there like sacks of potatoes too, right? Like, the Chronicoms don't care. They are just, that's waste at that point.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Just sacks of potatoes. It was just like the discards. Like, okay, we're done with these guys. And we don't even care to clean them up. Like,
just going to leave them there.
Just in a pile. It's fine.
And then the other thing was that when Coulson breaks his handcuffs, his arms weren't even through the bar.
Were they not?
I know.
No. Yeah. Yeah, they had been for a while, but then at the moment that he breaks it, like, his one hand is under the bar and the other hand is behind it, and it's not the
it's continuity goof.
The handcuffs are not around the bar at all.
I do enjoy that, because I had forgotten up to that point that he could just do that. Right? Like, I had that moment. He just snaps and I'm like, oh yeah, he's a robot, of course.
You ready to get out of here?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do love it when our heroes do stuff like that. Like, Ollie used to do stuff like that all the time. Like, we had half a season where he could have just walked out of jail, but he's like, being a good guy until he had to be.
Right.
Interesting point. Also, a thing that we learned this time is that the, I think we established early on, and you guys were talking about this a little bit last week in terms of the sort of perceived threat, right? early on, I think they did establish in this season that they've been looking for the Chronicon timeship, and the Chronicons have been looking for them, but neither has been able to locate the other. And so they point out this time that the Chronicon ship is underground, which is why they couldn't find it. Which I
did
kind
of like this. I sort of like the submarine aspect of that. Like, we don't know where they are. They don't know where we are. I didn't buy last week that like giving away their position was such a huge deal, because they hadn't really put that narrative to us much. Also, 1976 missiles are not going to hit that.
One of them did.
That's just not
because well, they had the advanced.
The point is that
they had advanced tech.
That Malik,
Yo, right, maybe they had advanced stuff.
They specifically said that Malik upgraded all their tech, and that's why.
Okay,
because everyone was like, they shouldn't be able to even see the ship. Like, what's going on?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. I think they covered that one.
I didn't care beyond like a small point. What I did care about is that, and we forgot to cover. You were right, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was about to bring that up. Thank you.
It's true.
Yeah. No. Well,
I should have noticed. Yeah. I mean, several readers chimed in to point out that I neglected to notice that the EMP didn't take out Gemma, and also that when May touched Gemma, she
got her
feelings.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So. Same here. That was our mistake. Dan.
Thank you. Good work, thank you, man. Various
you are,
readers.
You're now the... You are the king of you are the Commodore,
the Commodore
of Conspiracy
the
Corner.
The
Commodore of Conspiracy
Triple
Corner.
C.
Yeah.
The illustrious Triple C.
So speaking of Conspiracy Corner, do you think Fitz is in the White Room?
I was thinking about that, actually. That was because she says something like, Gemma says something like, he's totally exposed where he is, right? Which kind of makes me think he's hiding in plain sight. And I think because they have been in that construct, right? Like, that was the whole thing with them last season.
I guess so. I mean, if you think it's the same thing, I suppose.
Right.
So,
or, like, you know, they are aware that there's a way that they can be sort of plugged into the Chronicom consciousness. So it does make me wonder.
Oh, man.
Oh, wait. Hey, you want an extra conspiracy
John,
on top
John,
of that?
Do you want to open the door?
Okay. I wonder if I just came to the conclusion the guy's coming to, but go ahead, guy.
What if Fitz is the chief Chronicon.
It's Sybil? Yeah, that's exactly what I just started thinking.
Oh,
yeah.
Either Sybil or the guy in the field, but I'm thinking Sybil.
Yeah, because...
Well, the guy in the field's dead now, I guess. At least he's been shot.
Yeah, he's probably fine.
Yeah.
I think he's dead, but he might be back because they might want to just reuse him.
Yeah, I'm thinking Sybil, just the way she described herself. I do love a villain that is calculating and cold, like a little bit. I didn't particularly like the architect in Matrix, but you know that kind of feeling of like
the chess master,
just divorced from it. You know, like okay, I'm dealing with all of this. I will never lie to you, but I'm not going to volunteer anything either. As John said earlier, I like that. In a way, that would be interesting because it would mean that if she is really Fitz's consciousness, then should our team not be sort of going along with what she wants? Like, you know what I mean? There's a weird conflict of interest there.
Right. Yeah. Other than we don't know exactly how that's playing out, right? Maybe they are.
Yeah. And they certainly don't. They have no idea. So.
Yeah.
No, and Luke and her were butting heads at the very beginning of the show.
Right. And exactly. So there are, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of potential there. I think he has to be somewhere connected to that, is my guess. Like, somewhere amongst the Chronicoms, obviously, would seem like hiding on their ship, in their VR space, something like that. I'm really hoping that next week, I think next week we'll be, like, passing the midway point, that there's, like, a button or something that tells us... You know, at the end of the episode or something, maybe we know where he is. I mean,
Sybil's wearing a button that says, I'm Fitz.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want.
Vote Fitz.
It's not that I think that he's, you know,
Sybil shows up wearing a kilt.
Yeah. Don't mind me. No, it's not that I think that the show has suffered from his absence, but I do miss him as a character.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'd be great to have him back. Button on next week's episode is we see Gemma just voluntarily drop into the VR room and you know, fits there, and we work out that they're connected.
Yeah,
because clearly the Chronicons are able to communicate through time and space, right? With I'm gonna keep forgetting her name. What's the name of the big bad?
Which is
the VR lady?
Sybil.
Sybil, thank you. Yeah. Clearly they can communicate with Sybil whenever they want through time and space. So that goes towards Dan's point, especially that, you know, Fitz could be there getting messages from the future.
Right.
Or from beyond time, I guess.
Messages from beyond time.
Well, you know what I mean? Like she's...
Messages from Dan's Naz.
That's a weird out of podcast joke.
You got to read Dan's Twitter to figure out what that was about.
Let's just not explain
an ad for,
it.
That's an ad
Dan
for Dan's
is a huge
Twitter.
Fan.
I will say
Dan is a huge fan of Naz, and he's just listening to those albums over and over.
I do want to share with you, and I think this is sort of a totally separate thing. But I got an email from somebody at the day job over at Six Colors, pointing out something that I had missed in a post. And they signed it.
Did they ask Jason to fire you?
No, they did not. I skipped past the name, but I got to the end, and it was no joke. It was signed Biff, and I was like, "Is this a joke?" And then I went and looked at the name. I was like, "No, his name is Biff."
Oh, that's awesome.
I was gonna just reply and be like, "Great name," but I was like, "Nah, I don't want to be weird about it." But like,
no, yeah, keep the don't.
But
don't
I was very amused to get. I just got to the bottom. I was like, "Wait, what?" Maybe they're just a listener of the... Nope, that's their name. Okay, cool. Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool.
Anyways, if you are a listener, Biff, then you're great. We know this.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the name. It's written on the tin.
That's right, exactly. Any last wrap-up things for this episode?
No, I think we covered most of it. Okay, well, I guess we'll wait for the... Do you want to do the ritual?
Yeah, let's do the ritual. Guy?
Level 2, Biff.
Oh, okay.
boy.
Little
How could you be so harsh?
Episodes. Well...
How dare you, sir.
A little less great than some previous episodes. Mostly because I felt it was a little bit filler. But great character moments still... Still a really, really fun episode. Still one that I enjoyed a lot. Just not one that sort of made me jump up and be excited as much as some of the other ones have this year.
Yeah.
Or this season.
Right. John?
I think I'm going to disagree slightly. It's a 4.2 Biff.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Did we just take our Biff? I just added 5 levels to Biff, and now you want to turn it into like a 100-point system? It's a 76. It's a 76 on the Biff scale.
I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it more definitely more than last week's episode, which I enjoyed. But I mean, I thought there were good character moments, of course, that we had already talked about. The thing that we didn't spend a lot of time on is Coulson's speech at the end, and I love.
Oh, that was a great speech.
I love a great Coulson speech.
Yeah, it was good.
Anytime Clark Coulson can stand up. Yeah. Stand up in front of the bad guy and, or at least, you know, we currently assume to be a bad guy and tell him what's what. It's a great time. So, and then the stuff with Mac and, you know, like having to kill his parents and then them getting stranded. That was all. And Sousa deciding that he was going to stay with the group. Was
feeling
a good moment too. So I don't know. I thought I had a lot of great moments, and so I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. My ratings are immutable, but after John's explanation, if I could ever go back and fix it, I would put it as a level 3 Biff, right? Because I have
effort.
Not considered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coulson. Yeah, exactly. Coulson's speech was fantastic. I love that kind of superhero speech. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am going to call this a 1976 Biff.
Bicentennial
Biff, that's right. I actually kind of agree with Guy's initial assessment, which was, I think here's the thing fundamentally for me is like, we have been a little spoiled this season, especially with the you know, individual episodes that are real homages and like love letters to these little time periods. And okay, you know, critiquing as well, but like to really dive into all of the, you know, trappings of these eras. And this one, I think, felt a little bit more just like your standard episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is still very
costumes,
good.
The costumes were off the time, but that was it.
But like, there was the title card was, I think, the sort of more like the standard title card. Sure. Like, it wasn't buying, you know, hard into any particular genre or homage or whatever. And that's fine. Like, again, like I said, I think it was like a standard episode of the show, which is still a good episode by any other measurement. I just thought for me, It was not as compelling as some of the previous ones, but I liked a lot of what was going on there. I think it's just, you know, it's merely a matter of comparison. Like, when we've had episodes that are just so, the season has been aces, and you know, this is still a top-notch episode, but it's just not quite as interesting or complex. It's a degree of difficulty thing, I think, more than anything. So I really enjoyed it. I like the character moments a lot. It felt like maybe we were settling a bit more into our you know, standard non-time jumping aspect of it. You know, you could almost put this in any other season and you'd just be like, yeah, it's just an episode of the show. But it's still good. So
I do think this is an episode that was I mean, it's basically a bottle episode, and I think they saved a lot of money on it.
Yeah, well, the lighthouse, right? We held that around for a while.
Reused the lighthouse. Yeah. It's another bunker. It's another bunker episode. They call them bunker episodes, not bottle episodes on this show.
Okay. Well, yes, it's a bunker episode. I mean, the only real shot that we get is the missiles hitting the Zephyr.
Right, right.
Kind of. Oh, there's a time warp. Whatever. There's not much, you know?
Let's really break down the line items on the budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is I actually admire that. You have to, when you're making a TV show, guess what? You got a certain amount of money. You can spend it one way or the other, and you can either spread it all evenly across all the episodes or decide to punch hard on some certain ones, and I think they've been doing that a lot. This one, I think, was an intentional lull, both in terms of sort of the progress of the story in some ways, and chose to put the weight behind the characters rather than, you know, the trappings of the settings and the costumes and the makeup and all of that.
And they gave us a whole, I feel like the setup for next week's episode is also really interesting. And I will say here, next week's episode entitled The Totally Excellent Adventures of Mac and the D. I'm here for whatever the hell this is.
I've seen the trailer, and it's about as it's,
and I believe,
not so as you would expect.
Yeah,
I'm not, is it a Bill and Ted's thing?
A little bit. I mean, you know, it's got a vibe like that. I mean, they don't time travel in it, but
I believe it's. And I think this is not.
I mean, other than the time travel that they're currently doing.
Right. I believe that even though this isn't said outright in this episode, I believe they're in the 80s next week.
Yeah.
Okay. I have not watched.
So wait,
they've
been around 4 years? Wow. Anyway, whatever. We'll discuss that next week. So.
And Coulson is in.
Well, no one's surprised by that. No, anyways, we'll be back.
I think the method of his appearance is what's
all right,
surprising.
I'll have to go watch the trailer after this. Yeah. I haven't done it yet. Okay, I'm excited. We'll be back next week to talk about that. Right now, though, we're going to jump over and do some quick superhero sweep. The only thing I had on my docket this week is that we definitely made Guy catch up on Stargirl.
Yeah. We shamed him, and it worked.
You deserve to shame me. I mean, you deserve to shun me. You deserved... Well, discommodated. You know, when Worf screws up and of the Klingons turn their backs to him? Yeah,
sure.
You've been decommodanted. Decommodored? Decommodored.
Decommodored. That's exactly
Take away your Commodore's records.
Exactly. Lionel Richie's the best, man. weird Commodore facts.
That's not a weird one, but yeah.
No, it's, yeah. But I mean, I don't think a lot of our readers are really up on the lineup of the Commodores.
We're going to get letters.
Well, we're going to shame them.
Yeah, we're going to get letters. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Well, I'll just go dancing on the ceiling. Wow. That was great. I watched the first two episodes when it came out. And then I put it aside because I had whatever. I had other stuff to do. And you guys really did shame me. Like, I think, John, you just texted us and you were like, Guy, go watch.
Just do it.
Just drop everything and go do it. I'm like, oh man, I've got four to watch and I feel behind, but I did it at your behest. And wow, were you ever right. The last episode is episode 7, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. We get to see Sportsmaster in full glory. Yeah. And I don't think we ever.
I think the fight is in 6 or 5.
Yeah, the fight's
five,
in 6,
it?
I think.
Yeah, I think it's in 6.
Okay.
I can't remember, but anyway, I think it was a moment in episode 7 when he comes up to Stripesy and is just being like, and they're in civilian clothes, and you know, like he's a dick no matter what he's wearing.
Here's what I will tell you right now, John, is that for years I was pushing the question, and Quentin Lance being the question. And you were like, what I thought, doing a joke, saying that Sportsmaster should be a thing.
Yeah.
You were so right. You were so right that Sportsmaster is way better than the question.
I mean, the funny thing is, like, I used Sportsmaster as a joke for so long, and now that he's a thing, he's great.
He is amazing.
Yeah, I don't know.
He is hilarious.
The stupidest concept, right? It's the dumbest. It's the DC-est dumbest concept in the world. That this guy has like a hockey stick and a baseball bat and like pucks and stuff. And that's what he uses to fight people.
He's got a badminton birdie that blows up.
Yeah,
right. Smoke screen.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. And they have managed to make him. You know, at the same time, a little bit dumb. I mean, but, you know, using exactly the same stuff that he uses in the comic books. And at the same time, just like this delightful dick and also scary.
Yeah. Yeah. He's effective. And he's smart. Like when the big robot shows up, he's like, okay, we're out of here.
Yeah.
Big credit to that actor who is, mm-hmm. I think, just does such a great job of.
Yeah. The two of them, he and his wife.
Yeah, they're both really good. Yeah. I mean, the scenes where them dealing with the football coaches, which I think we alluded to previously, just being like the helicopter parents, but with a vengeance, I think is fantastic. Yeah. I really enjoyed their performances, and they're just like, they're over the top. It's great. It works really well in this show. I feel like, especially it's just,
I love it when they threaten the gambler because he littered.
Yeah.
He basically intentionally litters because he's a dick. And then
they're all just jerks for the most part.
But in various different ways too. And the thing about them is that they're jerks who still love their daughter so much, like too much in a way. I mean, like they're obviously doing things that they should not be doing
they are the leaders of the homeowners association. They will be mad at you if you barbecue after a certain time at night, you know what I mean? Like,
completely.
It's so over the top. It's so perfect. I really, really like them. Well, I mean, I don't like them,
but you enjoy, you love to hate them.
Yeah, I enjoy having them on screen. It is a delight. It really is. And I didn't think it possible. But it's great. Yeah, it really is. And it fits really well with the show. They are scary. What's the wife's superhero name?
Tigress.
Tigress,
yeah.
Yeah, and we get introduced to Artemis.
Yes, she's been in it a few times, been name-checked a bunch, and we saw her a little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
which is cool.
We're clearly setting up for the teen injustice society, right? Like, with Henry and Cindy and Artemis, like it does feel like they're kind of positioning that as the, maybe that's like a season 2 thing.
Yeah, the adult actors on the show are all great.
Yeah,
Luke Wilson is like, he's doing a really good job in a weird role, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think he does he's really good at being, I think he's very earnest about, you know, the risks, right? Like this you kind of have to address that, right? Like you can't have the adult being like, yeah, kids, go nuts on being superheroes.
Yeah.
Against these villains who murdered all of my friends.
Right, and I particularly love the scene where he's sitting with Stargirl. Oh God, what's her name?
Courtney.
Courtney. Thank you.
Courtney. Yeah.
After the battle, and she's all upset that they didn't follow her lead and they didn't do what she said, and she was really scared because she was going to get them all killed. And he's like, "Yeah, how does that feel?"
His delivery on that is really good. Yeah, it's so annoying. You know,
I know. Like he holds out his hand and walks her down the garden path, and at the end is just like, here's me hanging out. This is where I've been the whole time. So, you know, maybe don't get so mad at
me. Destroys her.
Yeah, but in a kind, friendly...
Yeah, I know, yeah. Right.
Yeah, he could just yell at her, but he doesn't. He's like, okay, let's use this as a teaching moment. And immediately after that, he's like, well, we can't confiscate their goodies back. Like, that's not going to work. So now we need to learn to manage this rather than... It's too late to nip it in the bud, so now we need to figure out how to manage it. You know?
Yeah.
No. So lots of great stuff there. I've really been enjoying, I've been looking forward to it every week. And I feel like it's just become one of the, there's not a ton of new TV on now. And so it is still fun to get like new episodes of something that I'm genuinely just very, very excited to watch. So
I think if we weren't, and I know I just caught up on it, but I think if we weren't doing S.H.I.E.L.D., I would suggest we'd at least spend half the show.
Yeah, it would have been a good one to do. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. They may get a second season, so who knows?
Yeah.
Doom Patrol has started coming out again. I've watched half of the first episode.
That's still on my list to catch up on.
It is as Doom Patrol-y as ever. It's weird. It's real weird. It would be difficult to do a show, but
I was actually going to get back to Doom Patrol, and then I remember that I haven't finished Runaways yet. And I thought, well, I'm already two seasons into Runaways. I might as well finish Runaways first, since I know that that ends in season three. So, I'm working my way through that, which I'm, still enjoying. So,
I'm still way behind on Batgirl, which I feel like I should catch up on.
You got time. I haven't watched even the first season of Doom Patrol, but I think it's all on HBO Max now down here, so I can watch. That's probably next on my list after I finish Black Lightning, which I've only got a few episodes left in.
Yeah,
I'm way behind on Black Lightning
too. I finally got Post-Crisis in that show, so. My feeling on that show is I like it. I actually think season three probably not as good as season two. And my biggest problem with that show
I can't believe it's season three.
I know. My biggest problem with that show is it does feel a little loosey goosey. It has that CW feel of sometimes like, wait, did they just skip? I sometimes go into episodes feeling like I missed something because like just the way the characters interact, you're like, wait a second, was there a thing that I forgot about? Like they just sometimes play kind of fast and loose with some of the details. Like there was something that bugged me where like there's a whole thing about, Black Lightning being part of this resistance in season three, but we'd established earlier that like the people he's resisting against have bugged his house, and maybe he knows that, but he don't really seem to take any attention or pay attention, or it doesn't seem to have any consequences whatsoever. And it's like I feel like sometimes they just have little plot threads that they start exploring, and then they're like, nah, forget about that. I really enjoy the actors and the characters on that show. And I think it's such an interesting and different dynamic from a lot of the other even the other CW superhero shows that it bears watching. So
it's more thoughtful. Well, at least the first season was sort of more thoughtful in a way.
And it doesn't tend to be really episodic. It really is just kind of, they do these little chapters and like break them out into little mini stories, but they all kind of flow from one into the other. I really like a lot of the characters. They're very charismatic. There's a great family dynamic that's going on, which I think is unusual in the way that it plays out. And I do think they take some angles and different approaches to some of this material that other shows don't. So,
Black Lightning, the character, was also in Young Justice season three as sort of a principal character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great season. As for Doom Patrol, it is not a CW show. It is more akin to Watchmen on HBO than, sort of the shows that we usually cover here. Not that it is as thoughtful in the way that it portrays society or has a point, but in as much as you could tell that they were both Vertigo comics, or... Actually, Watchmen wasn't, but like the Vertigo branding from DC sort of came out of the Watchmen / Dark Knight Returns, like the meta commentary on the comic industry that was sort of kicked off in the late 80s. Sandman is in there, like it's more akin to that. It's weird, it's enjoyable, and it's definitely worth watching. But it is, it's, I guess, more difficult to crack jokes about or just to discuss. I think it's worth watching.
Yeah. Oh, this is on my list. Yeah. Yeah, not much else, I think, superhero news-wise to report. Do we have any other things going on this week?
Do you want to talk about Michael Keaton again? Because I do.
I think I'm okay.
Is this now a Michael Keaton show?
You know what? If Michael Caine comes back as Alfred from Michael Keaton's Batman, I am never leaving the cinema.
Your head may explode.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. You know what he should be on? You know what Michael Keaton should be on that he's never been on is Star Trek.
Mm, yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Man, you know what? I love that Peter Wellen was in a Star Trek movie. And that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, well, that's about all you can say about that.
Yeah.
What is there left, really?
Yeah. I do. Man, Peter Welling's awesome. Actually, he was on, he was on Voyager, too. Oh, no, Enterprise. He was on Enterprise.
Oh, that's right.
Playing effectively the same character. Like a,
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he had, like, cannons on the moon or something. I forget what the plot was.
Mars, yeah, I believe.
Okay.
Cannons on the moon definitely sounds like an album from, like, the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, or it sounds like a sci-fi story from, like, 1930.
Yeah, right, like a Heinlein or something like that.
Right, yeah.
Cannons on the Moon, all of the angry tracks that got cut from Dark Side of the Moon.
That's right, that's right.
They're in a vault somewhere. So when Roger Waters wants to make another $1 billion, he can just release them.
All right, let's wrap up for this week. I, as always, would like to thank my good friends and teammates for being here. Guy English. Thank you.
I hope I never forget you, because I don't know. Diane's all been acting up on me. I'm really bad. I'm actually, honestly, honest to God, I realize how bad I am at names, and you really saved me, Bob. So I appreciate it.
Not great, Bob. John Moltz, always a pleasure.
And now I will go back to my white room.
You and Johnny Ive. Readers, thanks for following along with us here. We hope you're doing well and find a little enjoyment in the week, and that we can share that with you as we keep watching this last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which will be sad when it's over, but I feel like they're at least going out well. So keep watching, keep reading the transcripts, and we'll see you next week.
Dun, 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 dun.
No.